don't ever accept the offer to speak at Interesting Forge.
Okay, good morning, colleagues, members of the audience. Today is Monday, May 6, 2013. Welcome to this hearing of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. Today, we will be focusing on career technical education and going to hear some exciting updates of what is going on out there in the field.
You have one of these?
I do. So, with that, I'm going to open this informational hearing on the Career Technical Education Revitalization Grant Program. I'm going to call up Laura Roach. I have Laura Roach, Dandy Stevens, Tricia Conlon, Dave Baker. Bring yourselves up as you see fit.
Go ahead, Dave.
You want
to
join us?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
Dave gets left on the back row.
Yeah, he can stand behind us.
I'm sorry, Dave. That was David Baker.
Okay, we're up. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Laura Roach. I'm the director of the Secondary Post-Secondary Transitions Team at the Department of Education, and I am the director, state director for CTE. Chair Dimbrough and Vice Chair Huffman and members of the committee, thank you for giving us the time to talk with you this morning. As you know, last legislative session, we were able to see specific funding for career and technical education. It was just under $2 million. So we started off with a great program. We had 43 proposals and 8 were funded. There was $8.9 million requested and $1.8 million available. And we are expecting an ongoing increase in demand for this program. I think the things that we sought to incent did in fact happen. We had more programs that were developed by business and industry and labor and educators. We had partners who were paired with our business partners were paired with educators to review the grants. And our partners from business and industry have participated in site visits. All of our sites have been visited once in the fall, and we're in the process of visiting them again this May to see how things are going. In the past, I've shared with you where those grant awards came from and where they are located. The yellows are the ones that were funded. And as you can see, they were across the state, both large schools and small programs as well. In your packet, there's a list of the 8 grant recipients that we had, and all of them are moving along quite well. The people that we have with us today will give you some great insight into what it is to build a program, how to work together with the students and with their business and industry partners. So I'm going to be very brief in my comments so you'll have the opportunity to talk with them. Also, I have in the back of the room Charlie Hodson from Community Colleges and two of my staff, Donna Brandt and Tom Thompson, who have led this grant project and done the site visit. So if you have additional questions, please feel free to ask for them. Some of the opportunities that were created, I think, were very important to career and technical education in this state. We had new strength and partnerships between post-secondary and high school, as well as business and industry. We had expanded opportunities for CTE students. There were regional efforts developed so that we could leverage a lot of the different resources that are in these communities and leverage the resources from business and industry partner. We also leveraged our CTE program of study structure, and for those of you who have followed career and technical education, all of our federal funding requires us and our state plan to link high school and post-secondary education so that a student that is moving through a career path, whether it's to a community college or university or to a trades program, can see the next step connection. And so we did a lot of that. We also spent time on dual credit and coordinating planning and professional development. And we also were able to see some shared space, new models of innovation, and coordinated what we call career pathways work. One of the other things that happened is that our academic teachers stepped into the career and technical education world. For the first time, they were given opportunities to teach in a more hands-on approach and learn more about the careers that they're preparing students for. And as some of you may have heard at some of the other hearings, our teachers were very excited. It's new work for them, it's stimulating, and they found that their students were more engaged and they themselves were more connected to what they were teaching. So we also opened that door for students to have a better understanding of the career pathway, and we found that those opportunities gave us more financial resources. There are some challenges anytime you start a new program, and I think we need to just accept that for what it is. The short time frame that a school, if they find out in, even if they were to find out in July, which is not feasible, it takes a while to get a program up and going, get a grant written, get it in the door, get it scored, and get going. So we know that that's a real challenge for the schools and the colleges. And it, in order to grow it to its full capacity, it's going to take more than 18 months. And your students, even if you're starting in 9th and 10th grade, 11th and 12th, you won't see the progress so much in terms of retaining them in the programs or their graduation rate until later in the program. Measuring the significant impact on the students, did they actually choose a career pathway that was related to this? Did their grades actually go up? Did they actually graduate? Did they go to community college? Again, it's a time-consuming thing that we have to be aware of because we can't move students any quicker than they're ready to go. There was also some challenges with logistics, as you can well imagine. Bell schedules, bus schedule, financial MOUs. I see my partners here smiling because that takes a lot of negotiating between, especially if you're working between schools as these folks did. And then we're just still, again, as I said earlier, looking for the full impact, but it may be 3 or 4 years before you know exactly how much impact these programs have.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Yes, Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you. So what program do we have in place to track the results? Understanding that it will take a few years to start getting, you know, because some of the students getting into this might be freshmen or sophomore, and we don't know yet. They haven't graduated, some of them. But the 8 pilot program participants, was the program designed to where they would automatically give feedback every year at some point?
Correct. Chair Dimbrough, Vice Chair Huffman, we have several pieces in place, one of which was our site visits to go and see how they're doing twice a year. Secondly, all of our CTE students, including these students, are reported through our data system, which shows the enrollment numbers, the graduation rate, their academic attainment, and their technical skill attainment. So what we don't have right now is the capacity to identify this 2,500 students immediately so that we can individually track them right now. But the schools and the colleges may very well have that capacity. The other thing is we're doing a student survey where we're going back to the students and asking them, what did you learn? What did you find? How did this help? Those kinds of things. So we're on that path, but we're not fully implemented there. But both high schools and community colleges do have data tracking systems for all of their students.
Follow-up?
Does that answer?
Please.
I guess what I would like to see, Mr. Chair, is kind of like my conversations with the Opportunity Grant, is that the 2,500 students right now, and hopefully that'll expand rapidly over the next several years, but that they would be tracked on an individual basis from freshmen starting at CTE, they graduate, they move on to a trade school or some technical training or four-year university, whatever the case might be, so that we really do follow the student, follow the money to make sure that investment really is meeting 40-40-20 at some level.
Chair Dimbrough, Vice Chair Huffman, we share in your interest and support that. And as the state moves into a longitudinal data system that is under development, we'll be in a better position to do that. Right now, for example, we don't have Social Security numbers to be able to track students into employment. So that's a challenge. But we're moving in that path, and we're also working on another project called Career Pathways, where we're trying to bring those data elements and identify those. So we will certainly keep that in mind and certainly make every effort to do that.
Great.
And if we're not able to do it for some reason through our state data system, we should be able to get it from our local partners.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just add to that, Laura, you know, that's also one of the challenges when you're dealing in a pilot program kind of format. I mean, we have great hopes that we're going to bring renewed funding into this program, but what if we don't? then it becomes a one-off sort of thing, and then it becomes much harder to know just what is the impact of, you know, 1 year's worth of program. Right. Yeah, I assume that there will be some impact, but, you know, it would be much easier to track if it were an ongoing program.
Correct. The other things that we'll have to face as we move forward into the next round of awards, assuming that there will we fund those programs that are already up and running to give them a next step so that they can grow to the next level? That's a question to be decided. Or will it be all new projects? Will there be a stronger focus on regional efforts? We made that a part of our RFP last time. There were several efforts that came out of that, but do we need to make a stronger focus?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Was part of the criteria, and I know I knew this at one point talking to Representative Dimbro and Brian Krieg and others, but was part of the RFP the model to be developed by these districts? Was it to build in sustainability and explain how they were going to be able to keep the program going without future funding?
Chair Dimbro, Vice Chair Huffman, yes, sir. Absolutely. We ask each one to address sustainability. It is a challenge, and perhaps our partners here are in a better position to answer that, but we definitely ask them to look at sustainability, and that was one of the criteria for funding. Okay. And then I guess our next thing that we're thinking about is, will there be a stronger focus on career pathways? In other words, would that be a part of our criteria that we want to elevate to be sure that we are aligning these programs with good intention, with good depth of programming, and with students understanding truly what their next step might be? So we feel we've had a very successful year.
Laura, can I just stop
sure.
you for a moment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Laura, as you talk about career pathways, obviously we're talking about careers into the private sector. Could you talk about what kind of discussions or relationships you have with private sector entities to know what sort of career pathways are necessary in these various pilot areas?
Chair Dimbro and Representative Johnson, I'm trying to think about what you're asking me. I think I heard you ask me how we're working with business and industry and the private sector with these particular programs to provide those students with opportunities.
Well, to provide the industry with the qualified students and or CTE that they need for their industry.
I think I'm happy to say that we had business and industry at the table in all parts of the grant development process. So they were giving us input. At the local and regional level, there are advisory committees made up of business and industry partners, and that's also a part of the criteria. And again, I think these folks are in a better position to address that, and I'm happy to do that.
Follow-up. Is one of the criteria for a pilot project to ensure that there is a connection with the private sector in some degree?
Representative Hudson, yes, that's correct.
That was written into the bill.
Yeah, it's written into the criteria, and we'd be happy to share that criteria with you if you would like.
Love to see it.
Understanding that this year, assuming there is funding, that criteria we may refine it a bit so that it more closely aligns to some of the things we have discovered along the way. So be happy to get that to you.
Thank you.
So that's my comments this morning. I hope that gives you a little bit of insight. But here with us are Trish Collin, and she's at Chemeketa Community College, and she is also one of our CTE regional coordinators, or has been. And has been an outstanding leader in developing programs of study. So with your permission, Chair Dimbro, I'll pass it off to Trish.
Thank you very much, Laura. Yes, Trish.
Representative Dimbro, committee. I'm actually going to start with Dandy Stevens. She is the middle school principal at Mark Twain Middle School. And she's going to share what it looks like, and what we're going to do is build from the middle school up through community college. And so she's going to start with the kids younger and why that's important to get them engaged at a younger age, and then we'll kind of build up to what it looks like as we go through high school and into the community college.
Okay. Well, good morning, Chair Dimbro and members of the committee. My name is Dandy Stevens. I'm principal at Mark Twain Middle School in Silverton, Oregon. Mark Twain has 310 kids in grades 7 through 8. We are the only in-town middle school. Our school district consists of another 8 feeder schools that are K-8, and so we just worked with a small percentage of our middle school population, but the idea is that we're going to grow that because a lot of the 8th graders have been jealous of the experience that the Mark Twain 8th graders were able to receive. And so when Trish approached me about what this grant could look like, it was really clear to us that if we were going to implement this program for this year, it had to be sustainable. So we squeezed pennies and nickels all last year to make sure that we would have the money going into next year to fund a teacher, and even if we didn't get increased allocations. And so the idea is we presented the opportunity only to eighth graders and for one semester. So with that model, we were able to serve 56 eighth grade students, both boys and girls. And for a semester, either first semester or second semester, they started their mornings at the high school because Mark Twain does not have a shop class or an ag class. It's been closed for at least 20 years. But Silverton High School has a state-of-the-art facility. The high school had a teaching period that I could buy from them, and so we purchased that teacher for first period. Our eighth graders started first period at the high school, where then they took 45 to 50 minutes of class time every day with a teacher. And during the 18 weeks, they had experiences in wood shop, a little bit of welding, a little bit of small motor, and also some agriculture information, where they could also participate in FFA programming and discover how to get involved in the summertime between their freshman, between their eighth grade and freshman year. And so we had a different group of kids the second semester, and then as we went through that experience, we planned a day in the trades, which was also part of the criteria, where we had a community event that joined businesses and partnerships with the school district. When I applied for the grant, we partnered with Silverton Hospital, Kramer Farms, Premier Custom Homes, which is a construction company, Silverton Electric, which is a local electrical company that's been in business for probably 30 years or so, as well as some private practice medical physicians in the area. And so when our children went to a day in the trades a few weeks ago, then they had the opportunity to actually speak to people that are using the skills that they've been learning over the course of the 18 weeks. And I also thought it was really interesting that students who had the class first semester, which would have ended in January, really enjoyed the field trip and still remembered what they had learned back in September. So that's always a bonus. Of those children that have participated in that, they're forecasted for their high school electives already. I have two girls who are picking the welding for girls class, and then at least half of those students that took the CTE classes, eighth graders, are enrolling in some kind of CTE class as freshmen. And I think what it has done is, because of budget cuts, limited facilities, aging equipment, most middle school programs have eliminated those experiences for kids. This is a population of kids who love to work with their hands and can be very successful with it, but we don't give them any kind of experience until at least their freshman year. I used to be the curriculum assistant principal at Silverton High School, and so I can tell you that when I went into that middle school and I saw that we did a great job with arts and drama and choir, but then we had no home ec, is not what we call it anymore, but any of those kinds of hands-on classes, for those kids who really need that outlet and strive in that way, providing them with this opportunity has been invaluable. We had one student in particular, a young Hispanic man, who at the end of his seventh grade year, I approached him and I said, look, first of all, you need to go into the advanced language arts class. And he kind of looked at me and he said, oh, I can't do that. I said, yes, you can. Your teacher says you can. You're going to go in that class. We'll struggle through it and we'll see what happens. At the same time, he's also an amazing singer. So he was in choir, probably one of the best choir students our teacher has ever had. He was also in the CTE class and really liked the welding component of it. And so the conversation I had with him at the end of the semester is, I said, I'm not going to use his young name, look at all of the doors you have open to yourself. You can pick any of these doors, and that is our goal for kids, that we have as many doors open to them so that they can choose any of those as they get into their senior year of high school and beyond. When we had the day in the trades, my husband is a contractor, so he got recruited to participate in helping students with this. It takes a village. And he and the electrician created a wall, so the kids had to build a wall and then the kids wired for a light. And they had girls in there taking the wall apart, building the wall, putting it back together. And it was interesting to listen to the electrician say, you could really tell some kids had the aptitude. They had the fine motor skills. They understood the engineering behind the electricity. And it was really fascinating for him to see the young people coming up. At the same time, his association, his apprenticeship, trade association, had provided materials for kids that talked about the trade and apprenticeship program for when they get out of high school. But the other thing that's really interesting is I spoke with her, and they're starting a junior apprenticeship program for kids when they turn 16. And so when they turn 16, they have to have a teacher recommendation. They partner with outside agencies. They have to get 1,000 hours between when they're 16 and 18. And when they leave high school at 18, they will have a journey apprenticeship certificate. And so the man from Silverton Electric is very interested in partnering with our students to continue that. So,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Dandy. Yes, Vice Chair Hopper.
Thank you. Thank you, Dandy. I had a quick flashback as you were talking about small motors, and I think there's still a box in the shop in Eldon, Missouri, that has the leftover parts from the small engine. I don't know how that...
Put that together.
And no, it didn't run when I was done with it, before or after. I'm curious, Dandy, in setting up the program and looking for a sustainable future, have you been successful in not cannibalizing other programs to feed CTE? Because it'd be a shame to cut music to have CTE or whatever.
Chair Dembrough and Representative Huffman, I was worried about that because I didn't want our numbers to decrease in the other areas. And we did some schedule changing as well within our master schedule to create more opportunities for students to take electives. And so I added another period of the day so that they wouldn't have to choose between, say, art and CTE. They could take both. And so what we're finding is that kids are... I mean, the elective classes are full. I have 28 kids in art classes, 42 in choir, and over 30 in CTE. It did not, because I changed the schedule as well to give them more time to explore. I figure when they get to high school, they have to make enough choices between all of the requirements that they have to take. I wanted to give them this experience. So.
Great.
Let me say, first of all, that this program is exactly the kind of thing we were thinking of when we created the grant program. And Tricia, thank you for including middle school in it. You know, one of the things that I've always been, I hope that at some point someone will put a grant proposal together that will be a kind of summer camp from, you know, between 8th and 9th grade, particularly for the kind of kids that you're talking about, but for also for those kids that maybe need a little more work in math to get ready for Algebra 1. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always been a big challenge as we move to the new graduation requirements. There are going to be some kids who are going to, you know, get the math down through an applied manner in a way that they haven't before. And I don't know if it's going to come out of the Shemeketa region, but I really hope somebody puts together a proposal like that to get, you know, with something which could both work on skills, work on introduction to the different trades, and also create a CTE community.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, my name is Trish Conlin. I am right now the interim dean for life safety at Shemeketa Community College. I also serve still as the executive director of the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium. And what that means is, and what MWEC does, is we oversee the largest CTE or Perkins Consortium for the state. And so we manage about $1.2 million federal dollars for 29 high schools and two community colleges. And we really run it out of the consortium where we look at the needs of all schools. We also run the dual credit program, which is called College Credit Now for Shemeketa. And so we're kind of that outside outreach, or we reach out to the high schools, work with them on the outside rather than our inside high school programs, which we also have. So with that, what we've done is we've been able to develop a really strong foundation, a foundation that we're able to build on. And so that's how we approached the CTE revitalization grant. At first, we were thinking, oh, let's bring all 29 high schools in and do it together, but there were not resources to do that. And so the whole intent here, as we went forward, and I reached out to Mount Angel School District as well as Silver Falls School District and said, let's see how we can do it with these two districts and how we can build something that then we can spread to the other districts that we work with. I do live in Silverton, so it's my backyard. My son attended Mark Twain Middle School. He's now a sophomore at Silverton High School. And so it's very easy for me to work with those programs. I was very frustrated when he was at Mark Twain because there was no CTE. He took art and he was a TA, and that was all of his electives in middle school. And so for me, I kind of had that. I really wanted to give those kids that experience. I wasn't able to do it when my son was there, but working together, we have been able to increase that opportunity. So as we looked at the grant, and from a community college, we feel it's very important to work with our high schools, with our community, since we are a community college, and to get those students ready for what they're going to be doing when they hit post-secondary education. I think we all know that you need some sort of post-secondary education in order to really make a living wage and support a family. And whatever that looks like, whether it's a student that feels that they're going to go on to a four-year college or a student that's going to go into an apprenticeship or a two-year degree, I think it's important for us to start them off early. And so that was kind of the thought behind this grant, was let's dive down into the middle school. Perkins dollars in this state, we can't use for middle school. And so therefore, our Perkins Consortium starts at ninth grade. These state dollars allowed us to reach down and get the middle school kids. And so it's been a matter of leveraging funding from a variety of sources. And I think that's the only way we can do anything in the CTE world is to leverage these dollars. So we could take the Perkins dollars we were already using as a consortium and add the state dollars and then make something much bigger happen. So at Silverton, we have the ag program that's available for kids, the agriculture. At Mount Angel Middle School, the kids have, they started pre-engineering and robotics courses. And it is so much fun to go in those classrooms. I would encourage any of you to go and visit these classrooms where you can see the kids actually getting excited about it and doing it. And then we, at Silverton High School, we've expanded. We have a girls' welding class that Dandy has mentioned. We also now have an introduction to engineering design, which adds to the really strong CTE programs that we already have at Silverton High School. At Kennedy High School, kids are getting science credit for their CTE classes. Kennedy High School in Mount Angel has figured out how to offer these really rich CTE programs that have the science standards naturally built into them. So every single student at Kennedy High School is now taking an engineering class and a biomedical class before they graduate. Kids are realizing that they have potential that they didn't know that they had before. And so it's through this grant that we've been able to both look at things horizontally and then vertically. So we're watching kids now in Mount Angel from the middle school through the high school taking these engineering classes and building on it, and then being able to talk to them about what do you want to do when you go to post-secondary studies. What has interested you? Same thing with Mark Twain now, right into the high school. I mean, the kids are taking the class at the high school. The other thing that's really cool about this program is that these two districts are working together, and they've broken down some of the boundaries. A lot of times you find school districts are very siloed, and they do what's within their district, and that's it. Well, what we've done here is Kennedy High School shut down its ag program a number of years ago. And those kids go to Silverton High School in this new state-of-the-art facility and participate in the ag program. They, in fact, 2 years ago, the president of the FFA, the student president, was from Kennedy High School participating through Silverton FFA. One thing we found that was that students weren't going from Silverton to Kennedy. It just wasn't working. So as part of this grant, we said, well, wait a second. Why do we have to have the kids move? So a Kennedy teacher, the sports medicine biomed teacher, actually goes to Silverton High School and teaches those kids first period. And so we've looked at ways that we share staff, we share students in this horizontal manner across district lines. And I think that by doing that, we're opening up more opportunities for all kids. And so if your school doesn't have something but the neighboring school does, why can't we share those resources in order to open up those opportunities? So once again, with Chemeketa, you know, we've looked at this and said, "What? How can we get these kids excited and ready to move into our programs? How can we get their math skills higher, their science skills higher as well?" Because, I mean, one thing, when if students come in and say they want to go into nursing, anatomy and physiology will get them. What if we can offer it in high school as a part of a biomedical program? Start them early so that when they take anatomy and physiology again in college, it's they've seen it, they've touched it, felt it, they have a better understanding of it, so they're more successful at it. And so we really see it as investing in our students that are going to be our students at an earlier age. One of the things we've looked at with our dual credit program is matriculation rate. And so we found that students that enter a college credit now class, and then we look 4 years down the road, maybe not the next year, but 4 years down the road, 46% of them come back to Chemeketa in order to take credit-bearing classes. And so we feel that these programs are successful. They do get kids excited. They start that transcript early, and they understand the opportunities are available to them.
Thank you very much, Trish. Any questions of Trish? Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The and godfather of Silverton. Yes.
Pardon me?
Yeah,
yes. Thank you very much. I just want to make a comment that I appreciate very much the presentations. And to your point, going to the next step, whether it's a kind of a summer school or something, it's clear to me, given the presentations from Principal Stevens and from Trish, that it's most likely to come from the Chemeketa area versus, I don't know, some other community college area, because this area is clearly on fire.
For whatever reason, the metro area was shortchanged in these grants, representing them, but so it goes.
We call that getting even.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Gallegos and Rep. Johnson.
Hi. Thank you, Chair. I just had a question about the evaluation process. Have you done evaluations? Do you have data that you've collected? What kind of outcome measures are you using, that kind of thing?
Okay. Chair Gallegos, Representative Gallegos, we did do a survey at the beginning of the year with the kids that are participating in these classes, and we're going to be doing a survey at the end of the year as well in order to determine what their interests were, what their thoughts were about the education, and how it has changed over the course of the year. So we are doing student-level surveys in that respect. I think that Principal Stevens has also indicated that as we watch kids forecast, that's kind of an education term, but as we look at them choose what program they want to go to in high school, that's also kind of showing, what in the past, we can look at past trends, you know, how many students have forecasted into certain programs and classes, and has that changed? So I'd say that surveys are one way to get that individual data, and then maybe looking at historical trends and how they change. Does that answer your question?
To some extent. I mean, do you have data? Do you have a database already developed? I'd just be curious in seeing some of that data, if that's possible.
Yeah, Representative Gallegos, Laura did share that we do have a statewide database that we use to collect data for CTE students,
okay.
And so we do collect that data. For all of the CTE classes that they take, it will show their graduation rate, whether they've passed their reading, writing, and math on OAKS testing. It'll show their technical skill assessment results as well. We also report numbers for non-traditional. And so with non-traditional, those are students where if you look at an industry and less than 25% of the people in that industry are of a certain gender, then that would be non-traditional for a gender. So in this case, welding would be non-traditional for girls. And so we do track that data as well.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Or maybe it would be helpful if we could get some of that data. We could send. I realize it's not everything you want it to be, but it's
right.
it is informative.
Yeah. Well, we'll be happy to share that data with you. We've just finished some runs, and in general, it's really just for the record. CTE students generally do as well in reading and math, and sometimes better, given a certain year. Graduation rate is significantly higher. One of the challenges we have in the state is when you say all students, that includes CTE students, and we don't have a good way to pull that out yet, but we're working on that.
Yeah.
So you have all students include CTE students, and then you have CTE students. Generally, their rates are as high, and in the past have been higher. in reading and math, and certainly higher in graduation, as much as 18% to 20% in some cases. So, depending on the program. So we consider it very successful, and happy to get that back to you.
Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on Rep. Gilliam's comments, I wonder if our two panelists from the Silverton area could verify if, in fact, Silverton is in the Christmas Tree District.
They'll have to verify.
Secondly,
Rep. Johnson, they appear to have a glow about them, so I would say probably.
Okay. I do have a question. Trisha, or I guess Dandy, what would be the, for Silverton High School, do you know what the 4 or 5 year cohort graduation rate is currently for Silverton High? Any, approximately?
So, Chair Jimbrough, Representative Johnson, when I was at the high school, I can tell you, and this is my second year at Mark Twain, so okay. I'm going back a couple of years, you know, they were in the high 80s percentage of graduating. So the issue with at the high school is that those kids love where they're at. They mm-hmm. want to keep those classes. Fantastic. And so if they start doing poorly in their math class or their language arts class, then if they need to have extra tutoring or remediation, they have to lose an elective. They don't want to lose that elective. So they do whatever they need to do after school, before school, to keep those grades up so that they are doing well. It's similar to kind of the student athlete, where a lot of your athletic teams have higher GPAs than the general population because they have incentives to keep those GPAs up. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair Dembrough,
yes,
and committee. I wanted to share a story from another school district that had applied for these funds. They got together with local industry. They applied for the CTE revitalization grant funds, and this is Yamhill Carleton School District, and they didn't get them. But the value in coming together with industry, having the conversations, was so great that the industry partner said, wait, we have to do this. It doesn't matter if the state doesn't give us funds. And industry has put probably $100,000-ish in. And next Tuesday, they're actually having a grand opening of this renovated facility and this new manufacturing partnership that they have with Meggett out of McMinnville. So I think that there's a lot of value when you put it out there and you get people together, this real grassroots, and just there's a lot of energy and a lot of value in the process even, and great things can happen.
That's a great point, Trisha. Thanks.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair.
Did you make it clear to David that he could actually speak?
We're holding off on David.
Oh, okay. He's not just arm candy, is that what?
Yeah. One of the, and actually this is kind of a lead up to Dave, you know, one of the concerns that we have as hopefully we successfully turn the ship around and begin to invest more in CTE is, will we have enough qualified teachers, you know, to teach in CTE, and what kind of training opportunities will there be, and partnerships between the unions, say, and existing teachers, and how do the schools of ed, you know, get back into the CTE training game? I was just last week at a graduation fundraiser for the ACE Academy, which in East County is a consortium. It's a public charter school bringing together. It's a partnership between 4 school districts and the trades and business and industry. And it's a great, great program in many ways. Anyway, their sort of valedictorian speaker was a young woman who was going on and on about her, you know, all that she learned while she was at ACE. But she herself is not going directly into the trades. She's going to, it's either OSU or U of O next year. No, I'm sorry, it's Western. She's going to Western. She wants to become a teacher, and she's hoping that she will get some kind of CTE credential. That I think is also something we have to be thinking about, as you know, many of the people who have historically taught CTE are getting to retirement age, and we need to replenish them. So, Dave, I don't know if you want to touch on that at all, but tell us about the role of the trades and that great program that you're involved in Mid Valley. That's makes me envious.
Well, thank you for that, Representative Dembrough and members of the committee. My name is Dave Baker. I'm the training director for Central Electrical Training Center, and we are a union electrician apprenticeship program located in Tangent, grass seed land. I can tell by my eyes are burning. We represent about 90 employers from NECA and signatory contractors of Local 280, and also about 1,200 members, and we have about 100 apprentices right now in our program. And our jurisdiction does encompass all community college and two major universities. So that's how big we are as far as employment. Also over in Eastern Oregon, or Central Oregon as well, over in Bend, Redmond area. So our involvement goes back many years. We've actually been doing these style of, like we call them, electrical boot camps, just to get engaged into high school level training, to talk to the teachers and students about opportunities that are available to them. At the very beginning, we were never very, I would say, heavy recruiting these to become electricians. It was just kind of helping the vocational teachers with some hands-on. Basically, it would like day trips. They'd come out for a day, and it kind of expanded, and we grew into helping like youth build in our area, Lebanon Youth Build, because they had construction trade skills. We were trying to show them how electricity and electricians work in that system. And then it grew into partnerships with the school districts, where once we showed them what we were allowing them, the students, to do and the engagement of the kids, they wanted more activity with it. So we grew it from a one-day, four or five hands-on skills in that period, to now we do four or five days, you know, over several weeks or over a week period, about 20 to 40 hours of related training. So we show them a lot of safety, some hands-on skills, how math applies, and how any interest in our program, you know, is it, we're just providing some service that we think is necessary. And our program that we have with the Lynn County Regional Trades Academy just expanded on that. So the partnerships we had developed with the Lynn County Schools and Lynn County Schools, we were partners in both grant requests from those districts. And the one that got allocated was the Lynn County Regional Trades Academy. And so that had West Albany, South Albany, and Lebanon School Districts partnering together with an opening to the Benton County Schools and Sweet Home as well, as time persisted or if money was allowed for it. And so we had five different locations of training, and we were one of the five with the three school districts. So that was the logistics part of that was they overcame it. I don't know how. They really worked hard to get together. And hear about vocational programs that are defunded and closed. We are very fortunate. We have seven, I think, high schools in our area that still have functioning vocational programs, but they're limping along. So what these three schools did from the very beginning is share expenses. And so all the metal equipment that wasn't being used, all the wood equipment wasn't being used in one school district went to the one where the program was going to be used, the Lynn County Regional Trades Academy. And so they just shared resources. So they were looking at, let's have the welding program that's existing in Lebanon and enhance that. And the school kids would just come there, bus there. And same with the South Albany had a automotive program, which was open up to everyone, and then a masonry program, same deal. And then West Albany School District, they had finished carpentry, and they shared their time and seat with us in the electrical training center out in Tangent that they came out to. So, and it was a model that the student that was selected spent 3 weeks in each program, and at the end of the three-week period, they would swap and go to the next one. So they all kind of just rotate around. So each one in the first semester got to see all six applications. We did a lot of surveying to see what their interests were, and a lot of them already had a mindset that welding is something they wanted to go into, a little bit of carpentry, some automotive. So it was kind of scattershot around their interest. And we did take a midpoint survey, and I think we do an end of semester survey where they were at. And I can talk to the our person to take care of that. So we're having meetings over the next couple weeks kind of set this up. So, and their interest kind of changed. I mean, I know people that came into our program, they had no interest in welding because they'd never done it before. And so now they have some interest in what welding opportunities are available to them. So, and I think hearing these young ladies speak today, that excites me that we had already talked about, okay, well, this is great. How do we go forward? How do we increase our women participation of the young girls? How do we increase the middle school kids? And so we're coming up with ideas that I like to hear these type of success stories, because we look at the challenges as how do we make it better. And I think that's what we're moving to right now. There has been some challenges that we've overcame, and usually with a chuckle and a smile on our face, and let's just keep moving. So the interest of the shop teachers has been amazing. They were scared to have some school kids they didn't know come into their program. these alien creatures coming to talk to them. They come to find out they earned respect right off the very bat because they didn't know all the jokes and tricks they played. And so basically these shop teachers I saw in engagement that increased as far as their excitement level. And then the second semester students got to pick. They got to pick of five choices. We were not in the second semester, but they got to pick their five choices, and then they got two of their top three choices to be. And that was a nine-week course. So they kind of the selection process was geared more to the ones about to graduate. We want to make sure that they covered them to try to help them complete, and then trickle down from that point. So every one of the persons that selected the second semester, they got at least one of the two choices that they wanted. And that's going pretty good. I haven't had time to go out and visit the programs yet, but we're having a May 29th a celebration at our facility, kind of a, you know, kick off the summer piece and thank them for all their time and effort. So, and these students have been really, really good. They've really been engaged. The allocation of the grant came out a little late, so it was really hard to get their attention before they head off to summer. But the school teachers and principals and the counselors did a great job. We had about 140 people with parents show up at our facility to hear about the program before the summer started. And then they had over 120 or 30 students, I think, that started the very first day of school in the fall, our second day. They were out there at our program splitting them up and going to their programs. So they've been in it since the fall first day, and they'll be all the way up into it at the end of this month.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. Questions? Rep. Wissing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Roach, I'm a big supporter of this program. I think everyone in the committee is a big supporter. Have you visited Redmond's new Ridgeview High School?
Chair Jimbro, Representative Gillen. I have not. We got the wrong thing. Oh, he's so
moved. Yeah. Just go like that.
It's like he's embarrassed, too.
He said he needed my credibility to help him. Let's put that on the record.
It's true. I think he belongs in CTE class.
These two are freshmen on this committee. For the record, let me get
tell.
That up.
I'm not, Mr. Chair, I'm not a freshman. I'm not a freshman.
You're never going to get this back. You better get that gavel out.
I personally have not. Some of my staff have visited that facility. And
is there anyone here from Community College in the back that's not the headquarters? I know you're, but...
That would be important community college.
I think the big issue here, and I think Executive Director Conlon said you've looked at the resources, but have you really looked at the resources? Ridgeview is a brand new one, and they're going to have a great CET program. They've got robotics, they've got two dental chairs. And all this stuff, but it's going to be. We spent a lot of money to build it, and it's first class. Mm-hmm. I visited Benn High School, and half of their CET classrooms that the voters paid for is closed. Mm-hmm. It's built. Taxpayers paid for it. We're still probably paying for the loan. My point is, I'm going here, is we really need Department of Education, and we need community colleges to work together. Ridgeview is working with Central Oregon Community College into having that facility used for students at night. It's expensive training. We want it. We need it. It's a very expensive training. We really need Department of Education and the community colleges to work together to do this. This is my comments. And then the other issue, however, is it's very hard in rural in Eastern Oregon to justify this. So you briefly commented or some comments about busing, and I'd like to have you comment on how you get the kids there or how you compensate or something like that. Big supporter. I think we need more coordination. You know, we're asking the voters to do this, and you know everyone here is testifying knows that this is expensive to provide welding equipment, to provide production equipment. In Ridgeview, we got all this production equipment for theater and all the band, and I'm a big supporter of it, but we got to figure out some way to maximize the taxpayers' money to provide this service to our youth and to our future. I'm all in favor of that, but when I go and see a facility that taxpayers paid for sitting vacant, and I see Ridgeview that's got this great new facility that's going to be there, but it's not, they don't have the money for that either yet. Because they're going to have two chairs, dental chairs, they're not there, but we built the building. So we need really What I'm asking you, and if you're going to be reporting back to this committee or something, we need to be sure it's not just the kids, it's the facilities and the transportation and the numbers to make this pencil out. So.
Chair Jimbrow, Representative Wisdom, I'll get it right this time, right? You're not going to do anything else, right?
I've been here 10 years now.
Okay. I think there is a lot of that. In that particular case, that may be true, but there is a lot of shared resources going on, even in Eastern Oregon. Hermiston, Blue Mountain Community College, Treasure Valley Community College, they are all working with high schools and sharing instructors. And, in this particular grant, whomever comes forward with the grant is evaluated based on what they present in front of the grant advisory committee. But if there's something that we need to do to strengthen that grant application, we're happy to do so. But as you may recall, when I said at the beginning, we had 40-some applications and were able to fund only 8. So that's where this state grant goes. On another note, in the federal funds, we do ask high schools and community colleges to work together as much as possible. And we actually, Central Oregon is one of the areas that we have had outstanding collaboration over time. So we will certainly have a conversation with our regional coordinator out there and ask him to give us further insight into what's going on and if there's a way we can help in this next grant cycle.
Like, Mr. Chair, you know, but I don't think it's just the grants. I mean, we've got these programs now, so we need to look and see how we can reopen them and how we can use it and things like that, not just the grant.
Yeah, and I might just respond to that, Representative. You know, what first spurred the revitalization grant effort, it was back when Rep. Huffman and I were on the there was a workforce development subcommittee of Business and Labor back in 2009, and there was a member of that committee who was complaining about, you know, from his perception, the community college and the school district were going their separate ways and were not really partnering for facilities. And that led to our creating a task force to look into that. Actually, ironically, as it turned out, that particular district, there was a partnership in place. The representative just didn't know about it. But we did this task force that ended up recommending a couple of things. One, the revitalization grant program, but also creating a structure where CCWD, ODE, and BOLI would be meeting on a quarterly basis for the purpose of looking at partnerships, you know, with respect to the grant program or otherwise. And so that's happening now. And you know, that the next phase of that, you might remember we passed legislation asking that group that meets quarterly to look at ways in which the industry advisory committees for the high schools and the colleges could be partnering at a higher level. That actually, as I understand it, is happening fairly frequently out in Central and Eastern Oregon. But to take that and make it a more of a statewide practice, all of this is, you know, in sort of recognition of this sense that our funding's limited. We're not going to be able to have full-blown programs in every single school, but there are opportunities for partnership that we can seize upon, and I think, you know, we're seeing some really great examples of this here. Yes, Rep. Greenlick.
We haven't heard too much of this in the metro area. I wonder if is it because the metro area lags behind some of the periphery, or is it we just haven't heard what's going on in the metro area recently?
There are things happening in East County. You know, I mentioned the ACE Academy. The partnership of the four East County districts. The ACE Academy was originally supposed to have been in Portland, but there are issues with
things.
Our home district, you know.
I know there are some things in Washington County with PCC and the mm-hmm. Beaver High School and things like that.
Right. Yeah, it's so, you know, Rep. Wisman asked about the busing. And I know that within Portland Public Schools, at one time, just a couple of years ago, they were looking at a better way of using Benson High School and perhaps having students using that ACE model where students would be at their home high school for a couple of days and then at Benson, in this case, for a couple of days, so that, you know, you could have both, you know, you're maintaining the neighborhood school, but also taking advantage of the resources at the CTE magnet school. One of the, that they just were not able to overcome that barrier of what they saw as wasted time traveling from campus to campus and the expense of busing, you know, et cetera. And so I was, Rep. Wisdom actually took my question. Has that been an issue for you all? I know what ACE does is, you know, as I say, half the week they're at their home high school and then half the week they're at the ACE Center so that there's not a midday busing issue. But the way you're doing the program, that there is a some transport lag time, and has that been an issue?
Chair Jimbrough, the rest of the committee, there has been. So what we did is we start kids at the high school in the morning, so they're responsible for getting themselves to the high school in the morning. There is a bus that on its regular run can pick them up at Mark Twain at like 7:20. We arranged for them to be able to have breakfast at the high school, so we trained them how to do breakfast there, which was very scary for eighth graders. And then what happens is that we cut the period a little short, and so they get onto the bus, and they so they leave class about 3 minutes earlier than the conclusion of the class, and then they get back into the building about 3 minutes after second period's already started. So there is some missing time, but you know, we've just kind of adapted to it, that this is the expectation. You come into the building, you're quiet, you're respectful, you sit down, your teacher knows, and you're ready to roll with second period. And we are on a partial block schedule, so on Wednesdays our first period goes for 90 minutes at Mark Twain. Well, the high school is not on a block schedule, so they get done at the regular time, and so when the kids get back into the building and the rest of their peers are still in their first period class, I've hired a teacher to serve as a substitute, kind of facilitating those kids with additional projects that they have that they're finishing through CTE. So that's where they do the paperwork component or research for the next drawing or, you know, whatever that looks like. So it does take money to do that. You just have to be purposeful in how you plan it and kind of set it up with, you know, the next idea is if I set it up into my advisory group schedule so kids are coming into advisory a little late.
You have to be creative.
You have to be very creative. You have to figure out how are you going to make it work when the high school has a grading day, but middle school kids are still in school. So, I mean, it's just, you're constantly juggling.
Yeah, Dave? Yeah,
Chair Dan Brown, rest of the committee. Also, for our end, and I'm just the training director out there, so I don't have busing issues. We're just there, and they show up. So it's yeah, three different high schools that have three different schedules, block schedule, a blue, gold schedule. And so they just kind of got together and just kind of picked dates on the calendar to make sure it worked for everybody. And what we had was some lead time because the first two go-rounds of 3 weeks apiece, those students stayed within their own school district except for the one that was coming out to us from West Albany. So that gave them time to kind of get the logistics down, get the schedules meshed together. And I know that several years ago I thought West and South, they actually had a schedule that worked together and they had kind of pulled apart. And I think maybe this might bring it back to where their schedules mesh a little bit closer to make sure that this is part of the component of training that they can provide for all the students. And as we're looking into the future, they're starting to make those connections now, you know, to make sure that, okay, we may have to spend 5-10 more minutes at the one site before we take off. And the second semester was probably the more crazy as far as busing, but the logistics were handled by a training center, the Union Carpenter Training Center, which they have ACE Academy as well. So they actually loaned their building out to the Linn County Regional Trades Academy. So they just all bused to that point, got on the bus that they needed, and then they took off back to their home school. And then that's how they put them back in the same school. So that was a feat in itself, but again, everyone just kind of collaborated, worked together, and made it happen. And for our busing expenses, it was all drafted into the grant process to pay for that, so there wouldn't be any issues. Because they knew how many days they were going to be busing people, and that's how they kind of came up with that number, I believe.
That's great.
Mike, one comment. In one of our programs out at Treasure Valley area, we used online training. and it was in the IT area, so they were able to take their classes online, which is a little different from, you know, learning welding and whatever, but some of those programs like business, mm-hmm. IT, they can do some of that training online.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, thank you very much for this presentation.
Thank you for your support.
It's very encouraging. And now we just need to increase that grant by tenfold, and we will be okay. All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, my PAC took a hit at that fundraiser the other night, but anyway. So with that, I'm going to close the informational hearing on CTE. And colleagues, on Wednesday, we're starting at 8:30. Okay. So we have two items on the agenda. One having to do with civic engagement as one of the purposes of higher education, and again going from high school through higher education. And then one directly on dual credit and some new trends in dual credit. So it'll take us at least an hour. So we're going to start at 8:30. Okay. On Friday, though, we are still off. So please plan your weekends wisely. So with that, we are adjourned.